webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 11th of August, 2016, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of Gospel Revolutionaries Jimmy and Carrie McCollum, and where we say that we've got no quote for today. Oh, look at that. It's just a big blank hole where I'm supposed to have a quote. But right now from Palm Beach,
we're
Florida,
here to say you're on your own.
Yeah, go find your own quotes. Oh, boy. But right now from Palm Beach, Florida, bringing you more gospel, CPR is the Heretic's Hope, the Preacher's Paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Williams. How are you, sir?
I am well, and we'll be doing better once I finally get you to understand where I live.
You're in Palm Beach, Houston, Texas?
No.
Any town, East Tennessee?
That's reason why you asked for the weather earlier. You thought Alexa was stupid, but actually it was the other way around. Oh, did I say that?
Out loud, no less. Okay, right now from Palm something.
Palm Beach Gardens. You see, you live in the town named after the first mother, and I only have lived in the town named after the place she lived. So,
dang, Eden, eh? There's a place on the southern New South Wales coast called Eden, New South Wales.
Well, I am in Palm Beach Gardens, and thank you, folks, for affording me the time to get settled in a bit here. And it's only a bit, I'll guarantee you that. I'm in no hurry. But goodness, yes, big change in my life from Houston to Palm Beach Gardens, area code 33410.
Now, is it? So Palm Beach Gardens is actually a suburb or a city or a town or what?
It's a city of its own, but it's in the Palm Beaches. Everything around here is Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, North Palm Beach, things like that. So it's what's called the Palm Beaches, but there is no Palm Beach, Florida. So Alexa did not know what you were talking about because there is no such place.
Alexa, what's the weather like in Palm Beach Gardens?
Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. It's 82 degrees with cloudy skies. Today, you can see some sun and thunderstorm, with a high of 80 degrees and a low of 78 degrees.
Perfection!
Brought to you by your friendly... Wow. Well, I did not know that.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful, beautiful area. And goodness, I feel so very fortunate. This little neighborhood that I have here is so well kept, inexpensive housing in the middle of the most expensive place in America. So I'm right in the middle of everything, glitzy, glamorous, and expensive and wealthy. Living in my little home that was quite reasonable. So it's really been an amazing trip from Houston to here. And my little girl came over and helped me. And my grandson, my two-year-old, you wouldn't believe how helpful a two-year-old is when you are trying to move and carrying things in and out the front door, and he wants to go in and out the front door every time anybody goes in and out the front door. So you have two movers and two people there, and he was such a help. It was just unbelievable.
I think I can read between the lines there. Hey, listen, Mike, throughout all of this three of us as having new homes and so forth. We had a summer pledge drive and we had a conference in Calgary.
We did indeed.
How did the pledge drive go, mate?
The pledge drive, thank you. First off, thank you everyone who did participate. It helped tremendously. We have fallen behind after this pledge drive, and we normally depend upon Calgary and the pledge drive to balance us out all the way around. And even though it did a tremendous amount toward that, still haven't accomplished the goal of balancing all the books at the end of these quarters. We keep going on. What we want to do is get to where that we're not just trying to balance out the books, but that we have some funds to do something with other than what we do with the funds that we've got. We are accomplishing a lot on what we have. But if we keep winding up with these quarters that we have to leave things on credit cards and things like that, because we've got commitments, I can't not pay the bills. So people would say, well, just don't put things on the credit cards. Well, I don't know how to cut our expenses anymore where we are at this point. So, I do want to thank everyone who did participate because it has... it did help tremendously. Thank you so very much. In fact, we had we just got a call from another one of the Gospel Revolutionaries, and from up north, and they had another pledge that they wanted to do. So it's, you know, our pledge drive is in, but it has not ended. So if you just get inspired to do something to help us get through this, just go right ahead.
Call 321-220-4373. That is area code 321-220-4373. Speak to Jeff Robertson about what's on your heart.
Yes, and that is, you know, our approach to this whole issue of raising funds is very simplistic. Goodness gracious, folks, I guess I just got too nauseated with what I saw going on in all of these ministries. I come home and Calgary was tremendous. The exchange rate just killed us. We lost 25% of everything that came in just to the exchange rate. And so then I come in and so I see that Andrew Womack's got a TV show on, and I know Andrew Womack. And so I thought, well, I'm going to click on and see what Andrew's doing, because, you know, in the day, he was one who began teaching grace along with myself in a way that others had not taught before. So I thought, well, I'll see how Andrew's doing now. And I switched it on, and of course, you know, Andrew is speaking to several thousand people, he is building a Bible school that costs several million dollars, and they're paying cash for it as they go. And I sat back and looked at it, and I thought, you know, what just, you know, why is it that people respond to legalism? Why is it that people can get involved in something that is death to them?
Did you answer yourself?
I think it appeals to self-righteousness. I really do believe that it appeals to self-righteousness. And I, like I say, I know what Andrew teaches, and he's constantly holding out, you know, miracles to people and testimonials of all of these great things happening, but I was a part of that so much. I just always read between the lines, you know, like, well, was it a real diagnosis from a real doctor, number one? And then all of the questions, did it really happen that way? because I know how selective people can be and ministries can be in presenting the miracles that took place from the testimonies that come in. People need to believe that they are special.
Actually, they need to believe that they had something to do with the outcome.
Yes, exactly. And on a spiritual level, it's all right to have something to do with the outcome. You know, if you're watching your diet, or if you're, you know, aggressively getting help for somebody else or yourself. But this need to be spiritual in physical matters is really quite an amazing thing. Now, none of us are shocked by it, because we used to be there, number one. Mm. I try my best sometimes, Barris, to place myself. A lot of times I turn these TV programs on to try to see if I can connect in any way with why I used to think that way. I am so far removed from that type of thinking that, I don't even get envious of all of the money coming in, because I know to what degree my soul would have to be wrapped up in this thing if I were in that same position. Could this ministry be in the same position that Andrew Womack was in? Well, I can tell you of a time when Andrew Womack was envious of Mike Williams' ministries, that the Copelands were envious of Mike Williams' ministry. I say envious, I'm not making a judgment of them, but they all saw that this ministry had the potential of doing more than what they were able to do. But I know where I would be mentally and emotionally if I were there, and I know the people that we have helped. I know they wouldn't have gotten the help that they got if I had chosen to stay where I was. You know, and we try to figure out, you know, how many people have understood this gospel and choose not to follow it. Well, that's a hard concept for me, because I can't imagine making the choice. You know, people congratulate me and honor me and respect me for choosing to teach this over that. I can hardly accept those accolades, because I just don't see this as an active choice on my part. I can't imagine knowing something so wonderful and choosing money over that.
Yes, but the difference between where you're at and where other people seem to find themselves is, and we're talking about people who understand the gospel and then choose to go in a different direction, particularly in view of the fact that the gospel makes no demands on us. None.
Oh, exactly.
And the other way makes a lot of demands on us. We have to do this, we have to be that, we have to go there, we have to kowtow to this person or that person, we have to lead this or follow that. And if we don't do all of those things by the book, then we are somehow disappointing God, as if God could be disappointed, as if God didn't know what was going to happen in the future, and we did something that was off the books, and he says, oh my gosh, I didn't see that coming, I am so disappointed in him. Or maybe I'm in sin. The whole self-righteous pathway is, it feels good. It just plain feels, I don't know if I can say this on the show, you're going to shut me down or not, but it is, I'm sorry, it's the truth. It's a lot like masturbation. It gives you a great feeling, but it doesn't produce life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's like spiritual masturbation. I don't know a better way to say that.
Well, and you know, when you are so highly invested in being an active part of this, results are the things that cause you to know that you are participating. So what are you going to do if there are no results? You're going to manufacture results.
Well, another dynamic, of course, is when feeding your children on Monday morning depends on what comes out of your mouth on Sunday morning.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we are, you know, I got on this JAG in Canada, and I still am on it. We're so privileged to know the gospel. If everyone on the planet knew the gospel, I would still say I'm very privileged to know the gospel. The deliverance. Oh, my God, the deliverance that has come to my life. Just through knowing the gospel has been so tremendous. And what I thought I needed to be delivered from, I didn't need to be delivered from. And what I thought was a part of my deliverance from the things I wasn't supposed to be delivered from was a part of the things I needed to be delivered from.
It's difficult
you
to
play that over. Don't ask me to say that again. I saw that look on your face.
You know, as you were talking, it seemed to me like, for some reason, I got those cartoon characters, Eeyore and so forth, and I could see my thinking in one of those little balloons that they use to, you know, where people are thinking bubbles. And it's like all of the confusion is like a fog that explodes, just dissipates, just totally disappears. When this gospel, it's freedom. It's for freedom you've been set free. It's freedom.
It is freedom. I am so grateful that Jesus had no ulterior motives in setting us free.
I liked it first time you said it. I like it today.
I am just so grateful. What an amazing Jesus. He had no ulterior motives in setting us free. It is for freedom that he set us free. He didn't set us free for service. He didn't set us free for obedience. He didn't set us free for conformity. He didn't set us free to be Christians. He freed us to be free. And if I've learned anything, Barrett, in the process of this, Christianity is not freedom. I mean, and if it is, which of the 40,000 bondages is freedom? Because it can't all be freedom.
Yeah, which sect is right about their particular brand of freedom? And if I'm not free to sin, how the heck can I say I'm free? If I am not free to sin, I am not free. Now, I know people are going to say, they're going to compare this with the world and governments, and if I'm not free in America, if I'm actually free in America, then I'm not free to go around shooting people. I know that. But if I'm not free to sin in Christianity, don't be telling me I'm free. I am not free.
Well, exactly. Under Christianity, there is sin, and in the gospel, there is no such thing.
Yeah. How good is that?
Yeah, it just does not exist. Now, that's freedom. Now, the only way we could be totally free is to be one with the authority. You know, you can't have an authority over you and say you're free. You just can't do that. You're not free if you're under an authority. And the only way to establish total freedom is for authority and the individual to become the same thing. That's the only way you're free. And that is indeed what Christ has done. He has taken the authority, God, and the servant, humans, and made them one. So the authority and the servant are both one. The same as is explained in Hebrews, that the sanctified and the sanctifier are all one. I remember reading that for the first time, Barris, and it beginning the tricklings of the sands through the hourglass of understanding this powerful concept of being one, and that the sanctified and the sanctifier are all one. Oh, that is so good. So how do you tell the difference between the sanctified and the sanctifier when they are all one? Well, you know, we did one good broadcast before we ever came on this show this morning. Actually, we were doing some conversing. And now I've already preached myself happy. I, you know, This is at those times where I really don't care whether you're getting anything out of it or not. I'm having a good time.
So the verse you're referring to here, Michael, is in Hebrews 2, verse 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's read it again. Goodness gracious, it's too good. You can't just bring something like that up, Michael, and not read it from the context. What's wrong with
you? Too much good juice in this little bite. For both he that sanctifies and they who are sanctified are all of one. Colon.
Oh, my goodness.
For which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren. So he's talking about the verse before, a couple of verses before says, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor. And I love going back to Luke 24. Jesus says, should not he have suffered these things and then entered into his glory? So you and I are his glory. So he's crowned with glory. He's crowned with us, glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man. And then verse 11 says, for both he that sanctifies and they who are sanctified are all of one.
Yeah.
Now, the Greek word is ek, which really means out of. So mm-hmm. they are all out of one.
Yeah.
That, I mean, what a heck of a verse. For which cause, naturally, he's not ashamed to call us brethren.
Exactly. How could he be? And if there is no shame in him calling us brethren, can there be any division? I mean, all of Christianity is made up of God being ashamed of us.
Well, it's made up, it certainly is not made up of one. It's made up of two.
It's made up of two.
Dualism. And,
it is dualism at its finest. Saying, I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the church will I sing praises unto thee. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me.
Paul there quoted three different prophets.
He did indeed.
Old Testament prophets. So this wasn't
a prophet quoting Jag here.
So this wasn't just something that the writer of Hebrews said and made up.
Yeah.
He not only claimed this, that the one who sanctifies and those who are sanctified are all of one. They're all out of one. They're all out of one new creation. They're all out of one God. They're all out of one birth, new birth. They're all out of one resurrection. They're all out of one. They all come out of one.
And if you continue that conclusion, which Paul starts with this, oh, goodness. See, here's where I want to back up to Hebrews 2:1, and then we got to go all the way back to Hebrews 1:1. But here, Paul comes to this conclusion about the sanctified and the sanctifier. And that thought continues, the children and those that God hath given to me. Mm. So you see, he is bringing out this being one, God, Jesus, and man. They're all one. The sanctifier and the sanctified, the children, the sanctifier, Jesus, the sanctifier, and the children, the sanctified, for as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood. So he's showing this both ways. He's saying, okay, if you don't get it this way, let's turn it this way.
Yeah.
If you don't get it that way, let's turn it this way. If you don't get it that way, let's turn it upside down.
We'll keep painting pictures until you get it here.
For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same. So he's showing the point, that dynamic point where this took place. This sanctifier and the sanctified and God all became one. And he's explaining the process here to us, Barris. He says, now, okay, now let's look at it this way. I've explained to you all through chapter 2 about the whole rearrangement of creation for this to take place, about the angels being, second in line to God, and then man, and then Jesus came down and made himself one with man, and then raised man up far above all the angelic realm. Now, he's already explained that. Okay, if you don't get that, let's look at it from the man side. I've told you about the Jesus side getting to man, and now let me tell you how man got into God. So, for as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil. So, what is death? Death is this distance between God and man. This is all destroyed. What's the devil? The devil is in the details. And details they have. Oh, my gosh. Do they have details? Goodness gracious, the details. Of course, most people know that I was labeled by some as America's foremost authority in demonology. And, of course, you get involved in that. Not only do you know what you teach, you have to know what other people teach. And, oh, my gosh, it was like every move that you made, you know, demons could move into you. You're leaving the door open for the devil. And how does the devil get in? How do you get him out? This entire mental ward of exercising this thing that Jesus resolved 2,000 years ago. He destroyed him that had the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. Wow. This incredible fear of being distant from God. Wow. This incredible fear. This incredible fear of not being one with God. This incredible fear of there being two entities. This incredible fear that there's an angry God. This incredible fear that loomed over the entire human race, now it's all gone. And we're no longer subject to bondage. Bearus, when you know that you are one with God, you are no longer subject to bondage. When you know that, when all fear has gone, can I ask you a question, Bearus? Has all fear disappeared from you that God might be displeased with you?
I don't even know what that feels like anymore.
Wow. Has all fear left that somehow you might face a judgmental God when this life is over with?
Gone.
Bearus, you're not even subject to bondage anymore. You're not a candidate for bondage. I am not a candidate. The same as Derek Hensel brought out, that we are woefully unqualified to be sinners.
I love that.
In Canada. Oh, man, I'm still just...
We're going to steal that, Derek.
Oh, yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, don't come back at us. It'll get
this
you nowhere.
This is a statement made by Mike Williams in Canada. So you are not even subject. You're not a target of bondage. You're not a subject of bondage. You are in no way a potential slave. No way. Yeah, there's no possible way that you could be back in bondage again. For verily he took not on him the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham. You see this exchange, this constant he's explaining how this took place. Oh, well, I don't think it was necessary for Jesus to die. Oh, well, you know, go figure up a new plan then. I don't understand why we are so offended by death. It happens to every human being. So why not do it in a fashion to which you could explain the unity of God and man?
Yeah.
My goodness. Oh, well, I God just could not possibly be a participant in the death of his own son. We always say the greatest gift anybody could ever have is not to have to experience that as a parent, to never see your child. So why wouldn't God go through what one of the worst things was that a human being could experience? Mm. The death of their own child. How could you say that you understand humanity when you hadn't experienced the most dreaded thing that a human being on this planet can face, and that is seeing the death of your own child? This conversion of humanity and God took place through a death, a burial, and a resurrection. We've got so many people out there now saying, oh, well, the death of Christ was completely unnecessary. Well, sorry, you got folks, you're going to have to rewrite scripture. You're going to have to chastise the prophets. You're going to have to explain this to Paul. That's for sure. Because we have a place in time where death, a very natural thing for men to go through, and becoming God, a very unnatural thing for people to experience, that it was through death that this took place. It was through death. Not the death of anybody, but the death of the man who was God. Wow. What a powerful thing. Jeff did a video just this last week. And before we released it, I had a short conversation with him. I said, now, you know, when you talk about spiritual death, you're going to get some pushback from some folks, because this whole issue we came up with, you know, years ago, JDS and JDDS, Jesus died spiritually, Jesus didn't die spiritually, and it began to determine who of the charismatic movement was going to heaven and not going to heaven. You couldn't go to heaven if you believed Jesus died spiritually. You could not get into heaven unless you did believe Jesus died spiritually. So in the conversation we had after, I was sharing with Jeff, and I said, you know, I said, as long as you can explain to people the difference between spirit dying and spiritual death, you're okay. Because the pushback you always get on that is spirit can't die. Well, that is true. But we're not talking about spirit dying. We're talking about spiritual death. Spiritual death is a death to something, not the death of the thing. So it's not the death of spirit, it's the death of something pertaining to spirit. It is spiritual, not spirit. So this whole exchange that took place at the cross, was it needful? Yes! We wouldn't be redeemed if it didn't take place, folks. I don't get this obsession with trying to minimize the work of the cross, but that's what's happening around the planet with a lot of folks right now. Wherefore, in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest. When did Jesus become the high priest? It was only after his resurrection. Jesus wasn't a high priest when he came to this earth. He never fulfilled any priestly role whatsoever. It had to be through death that he became the great high priest. So if the death wasn't necessary, was it necessary for us to have a great high priest? You see, the ramifications of this just go on and on and on and on, to where that it is a complete rejection of the work of Christ altogether. And faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself hath suffered being tempted, I don't know why my tongue is rolling over the T's, he is able to succor them that are tempted. So, yeah, well, you were the one that opened the Bible. It's your fault.
Yeah, blame me. Oh, that is, there's some just beautiful meat there. That he might be a merciful. There is a word Paul uses in Romans called hilasterion, and it means, it is translated in the New Testament as propitiation. But the word is the same word as is used for the mercy seat in the Ark of the Covenant. Exactly the same word, the mercy seat.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a gorgeous picture. So he became then a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God to make conciliation, probably is a better word, conciliation for the sins of the hamartia, sins of the people. Now, remember that this is written to Hebrews. He's talking to Hebrews. He's talking to Jewish people, and he's explaining to them exactly what has taken place from a Jewish perspective. For in that he himself suffered, being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted. What would tempt a Jewish person who has come out of the failed self-righteous system of Judaism? What would be the temptation? Well, the temptation would be, once you've come out, to go back under it.
That's what the whole book of Hebrews is about.
Yeah, the whole lot. And so later you hear him saying, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. I'm not telling you to renounce your ethnicity. I'm not telling you to renounce your history. If you want to have a jolly good feast, go up the road to Jerusalem for the Passover. If you want to have, Feast of Trumpets, say, or a Feast of Tabernacles, or whatever feast. I mean, many feasts during the lunar year of the Jewish calendar.
Yeah.
Don't give it up. Have fun. Enjoy yourself. Just remember that these feasts are now meaningless because they were a shadow. Colossians 2 says they were a shadow of things to come. And, you know, there is something called shadow boxing. It's where you're pretending to fight an opponent.
Yeah.
And all religion is shadow boxing. You think you're actually fighting a good fight when, in fact, all you're doing is shadow boxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So the sanctified and the sanctifier are both one. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness gracious. Tell me any other religion on the face of the earth where the means of sanctification have become one with those that are sanctified by that thing or even that process. It just does not exist, Beerus. It is the destruction. This is so powerful. The ultimate destruction was of the very process set in place to get us to that point. We've burned all bridges. God, Jesus himself burned the bridges. Yes, there was a bridge to get us here. But folks, the bridge was burned. You can't get back. We have crossed into this place. Yes, it took a sanctifier. All right? It took a sanctifier. But now the whole process of sanctification has been destroyed. So that you will never be anything but one with the sanctifier. He did not become our sanctifier so he could sanctify us over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. He sanctified us one at once and then became one with us. You can't be sanctified by him that has become you. And you that has become him, he doesn't need to sanctify anymore.
Boy.
So here we have Hebrews declaring this whole process. Man, you know, feast days, yeah, go ahead and do them if you want to, because it doesn't make a bit of difference whether you do it or don't do it. The whole process has been destroyed, so the participation in it does nothing, and the non-participation in it does nothing, because it is complete. We in the Gospel Revolution don't try to tell you, even of your Christian habits that we always did. Confession of sins, partaking of communion, you know, goodness gracious, the list. Thank God I can't think of the list anymore. Do them or don't do them. Because whether you participate or do not participate, it gives no credence to them, and there is no value in them. They can't do anything for you, and by not doing it, it can't do anything against you. It's such a powerful place we have been brought into by the Sanctifier, that we and the Sanctifier are now both one. Wow.
Wow. Yeah, wow, indeed. Let me say it backwards. Wow. You know,
you're so brilliant.
This genius just pours out of me, mate. I can't. Now, that word sanctify, in the Greek, it is hagiadzo, and it is the verb of holy.
Mm.
Now, so for both he that makes you holy and those who are made holy, do you get
all one?
Do you get this?
Yeah.
You are holy. You are holy. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory, that's you and me, and honor, that he by the grace of God should taste death for every man. For it became him. For it was fit and proper for him, for whom all things are, and by whom all things are. In bringing many, now here comes my favorite word, in bringing many sons unto glory, he brought us into glory to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. To make the captain, the word is archegos, and it means a chief leader or a first goer or a prototype.
Mm.
To make the prototype of our salvation, our wholeness, soteria, perfect, teleos is the Greek word, and that doesn't mean without a marring, without a scar, and it means totally and utterly complete. To make the captain of our salvation, to make the prototype of our wholeness complete. Did you know? Golly, Jesus was incomplete.
Yeah.
Until this happened, Jesus was incomplete. Now, I know that you and I, Mike, have come to this at different ways, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say he had a plan to complete himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that plan was from before the foundations of the world. He had a plan to complete himself. He was incomplete and he felt incomplete, and we were his completion. You and I got to complete God. Oh, my God.
Well, when you put Jesus on the same level of faith, which thank God we can do that, we realize now that faith is Christ. Faith is not something we do. Everything that was a what became a who. So even the what of faith became a who. It became Christ. And when you go through, now we're in Hebrews, you know, we're not too far away from the Hall of Fame of faithers.
Mm-mm.
Who never were complete
without
in their faith.
Without us, it says at the end of
exactly.
that chapter. They
yeah.
were never complete without us. Oh, dear Jesus.
Yeah.
My mind is starting to boggle now.
We wonder the Milky Way. Goodness, folks, if you just allow yourself to wallow in this, CPR of the gospel. What are Barris and I doing right now? We are CPRing. Consistent, persistent, repetitive involvement in the gospel.
Yes, we are.
And all you got to do is open your Bible, folks. Just read a verse. And then see what the next verse says, and the next thing you know, your mind is exploring the Milky Way of the gospel. Goodness gracious, the vastness and the beauty and the fractal nature of this thing. And what were we talking about earlier? Oh, something about Andrew Womack and building a school. I don't know. I don't even care. Goodness gracious, we were talking about finances and the fact that we're running behind. But who cares now? It just doesn't make any difference, because our hearts and our minds have been released into this huge space of thought and wonderment and absolute fulfillment of all that is holy, fulfillment of all faith. Pierce, all faith has been fulfilled. All holiness has been fulfilled. Why? Because Christ is holiness. Christ is faith. And he was fulfilled in us. And we are fulfilled in him. It is a completion. It's an absolute completion. The one thing that I know that we absolutely concur on, and it's not that I disagree with Barris on this point, I just don't know yet. I'm not absolutely sure. I certainly acknowledge all of the places that it indicates that this was a plan before the get-go. I start to say at the get-go, but it's actually before the get-go, you would say. I don't know that that is true, but it's real possible that it is. Is that a problem between me and Barris? Well, about as big as one as you're hearing right now, that's as big as it gets, folks.
You bet.
But the conclusion is this. This utter completion, this utter, is amalgamation a good word to use?
Yes. Yes. They call it an amalgam when the dentist used to put that mercury lead stuff in your tooth. And
yeah.
It's taking disparate things and putting them together. Yeah.
Yeah. So this has been an incredible amalgamation of God and man. What?
Perfect.
How did this happen? Only through the prototype, who was God-man. God showed the perfect manifestation of himself was God-man. That's what God showed. God-man is the way God is.
Mm.
God-man is the completion of God. God-man is the completion of man.
Mm. Mm. If you have seen me, you've seen the Father. That from a man of flesh and blood.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this... this is what the fullness of God is. The fullness of God is man. The fullness of man is God. Man, I'm telling you.
I think we did that together.
Yeah, we... Because we were both floating in the same part of the Milky Way. So.
If you're listening to this PowerCast and you're enjoying what you're hearing, you can enjoy so much more. Look, if you want any of our hundreds of free products, go to www.gospelrevolution.com where we've got over 2,500 hours of free audio available. Go fill your boots. You can download any of our years of podcasts, decades of teachings, or you can tune into the Gospel 24/7 on Gospel Revolution Radio. Thanks to Gospel Revolution executive producer Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. You don't have to go to the Netherlands for it. Just go to www.gospelrevolution.com, hit the radio button, and go for your life. Fill your boots. While you're there, you might want to hit the donate link as well, and you know, have a little play, a flirt with PayPal or whatever. However,
we want to build a new $1 million school. Oh, hurry!
Yeah, I want to see it before we die. Now, while you're there, watch some of Jeff Robertson's videos. You heard Mike just refer to one of them, and that was What About the Resurrection from the Dead? We, last week, while you weren't around, mate, while the cat's away, the mice will play, and we had a wonderful time with Mel Martin.
I checked up on you guys.
Oh, dang. Did you listen?
I did.
I loved it. It was just a couple of old men. We were just shooting the breeze about the gospel. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed listening.
It was great. In fact, I'm going to head down to Mel and Al sometime. Yeah, maybe between now and fall or during fall, because I just want to catch up with these guys. These guys make me think, and they're great guys.
Yeah, they are.
What about the resurrection from the dead? And you know, look, let me just give you a little bit of bait. If you haven't seen this video, let me just bait you a little bit because you're going to enjoy this one point. Jesus is called, and look, I loved what Jeff brought out of this. Jesus was called the firstborn from the dead, and yet we know he wasn't because...
Yeah, exactly, that was good, yeah.
Yeah, because he raised Lazarus, and raised the centurions. He raised people from the dead, I mean, from the Old Testament days onwards. So he wasn't the firstborn from physical death. And that's all I'm going to tell you. Look, it's only a 5 or 6 minute video. Go watch it. It is, it, it, I mean, it's wonderful. You're gonna you listen to that, and you're not going to you're going to want to hear more. The other one this last week was a mystery was revealed, and we were perfected. Mate, tell us about the summer conference in Calgary. Just a little recap for those folks who weren't able to make it.
Well, this was a trinity that took place.
An unholy trinity.
And that was myself and Bears Bartlett and Derek Hensel all shared in this conference.
Did you notice there was no alcohol in my room, Bill? Did you notice that?
I've been looking. I've yet to determine that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'll give you the results of the analysis. But no, it is, it was really a tremendous time. Everybody there really enjoyed it. We had a great time. We will be getting those MP3s or CDs, however you prefer to listen to this. We'll have that to you pretty soon.
It will be up on our products page, so just go and have a look at www.gospelrevolution.com.
Note to Jeff, in case I forget, I'll also send out an email to everybody about the series being available instead of just posting it on the website. That way people will be aware and be able to go to the website to look for it if they get an email about it. So anyway, yeah, it was a good time. We had really wonderful weather. I flew out of temperatures in the high 90s and flew to Canada, and it was in the mid 70s. So yeah, what a beautiful switcheroo we went through.
It was lovely up there.
It was absolutely beautiful. I think this was Derek's first experience with Canada. I'm afraid we kept him bound pretty much to the Carriage House Inn. Once people heard Derek share, they weren't going to let him go very quickly. And you could tell Derek enjoyed himself. He enjoyed the experience of saying things he had never thought of. And he did some of that. That was really good. That's where the statement, you're completely unqualified to be a sinner.
He came out with some classics that I think are going to be permanent classics in the GR.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, we appreciate, and Derek, thank you so much for being willing to go up and participate in this conference with us. People really enjoyed you being there. I certainly enjoyed it. It was wonderful to sit and listen. And of course, Barris also shared during that time with his own good insights and wit and humor. With Barris, you get five lines of truth and a good joke. Five lines of truth and a good joke. Five lines of truth and a good joke. So I don't know if he's given himself a break to think for a little while because he's on hyperspeed, so he's got to slow himself down a little bit, so he throws in a joke just to slow himself down. But anyway, that's how it goes with Barris. And, of course,
You taught on the last Trump, and I got to tell you, that last one. Now, this is not a – just so you know, family, this is – two buddies just talking together. This is not two people trying to massage each other or anything like that. But that last one of yours, that was excellent. Just excellent.
I really enjoyed teaching on the last Trump. There were things that came out that I've never, ever seen in that teaching, even though I taught on it the better part of 15 years ago or more. But yeah, there was some tremendous things. I went through all of the last that Paul talked about. Paul talked about several things that he called the last, and that the disciples never mentioned. The disciples never mentioned the last Adam, the last Trump. And when Paul talked about something being the last, it had a very special connotation to it. He really meant the termination of all things that precede it. This was the last one. You ain't never going to see it again. It's not needed. It's not necessary. It's complete. It's all really the same things that we talked about. The only thing that Paul and the apostles or the disciples spoke about being the last on was the last days. And Paul very clearly in Hebrews 1 placed the last days as being while Jesus was teaching. Hebrews 1, that God has spoken unto us in these last days by his Son, Jesus Christ. So he very, very squarely placed the last days at the cross. And the disciples placed the last days as some place off in a distant future. And the things that accompany the last days, judgment and wrath and anger, look at just the difference in this, folks. If the last days were not when Jesus was teaching, therefore wrath and judgment and anger and all of that was resolved at the cross. But if those were not the last days and the last days are in the future, then the cross was basically irrelevant if the time before the cross was not the last days. So we went into several subjects that were the things that Paul called the last. And, you know, I just realized he called this meal they partook of, which was the feast day. It's called the Last Supper. And somewhere along the line, I'm not sure where that is introduced as the Last Supper, but maybe we should look at this as not the last time he had supper with the disciples.
Mm-hmm. It was the last Passover.
Yeah, very last Passover, yes. So as you can see, learning continues right on down the line. So we've always looked at this Last Supper as, oh, this is our last time with Jesus sitting around the table together. It's the Last Supper. No, it's the Last Supper. It's the very last Passover. Never one. Can you do a Passover? Go ahead. You know, get the bitter herbs and get all of the things. Study the Old Testament and come up with everything for a good Seder, I think they call it.
Yep.
And do it. Practice it. And at every point out where it's all about Christ. It's a wonderful thing to do. Or don't do it. It's irrelevant. Either way, it's irrelevant. You're either living in the new covenant or you're learning about the new covenant. But there is no such thing as not being in the new covenant.
This week, I got an email from somebody who is, they PM'd me, they private messaged me on Facebook, so I'm not going to say who it is. But this person says, "Greetings, Beris, I was studying Genesis 3 verse 8 and wanted to run some thoughts by you. Maybe you can help with the Greek and possibly the Hebrew. I'm looking at the phrase, in the cool of the day. The cool has the same Hebrew word as spirit, but when I look it up, it also has a definition of anger, he makes a reference to Judges 8:3. Spirit doesn't seem to fit that phrase, wind or breeze would, which I'm guessing where they came up with the word cool. Interesting, in the Greek Septuagint, the word that is used is dusk, but the Greek word is cowardly, fear, and dread. I'm wondering if we can rightfully use the word anger in this verse, Genesis 3:8. And they heard the voice of the Lord God walking in the garden in the day, brackets, age of anger, and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. Interesting also in the Greek, amongst the trees, reads in the middle of the trees. If this is a diligent interpretation, this would paint a very graphic picture of the fall of man, the anger of God, and the almost embrace of unbelief. I'm just unsure of the word translated cool as if it really can be used as anger or not. I welcome your thoughts. Thanks.
What think of you?
Well, having, I
throw away all the filters.
I can't. if I'm going to understand the subtext, I've got to first understand the supertext. I've got to see it in relation to something, which is why we have mile markers on the road. We know where we are in relation to where we're going or where we come from. So without the big picture, I find it very difficult to just take something holus bolus and just interpret the subtext. So I was going to use this as bait for people to listen next week when we're going to be dealing with the two trees, which I thought this really did belong, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. See, we're in the middle of a series, one from a garden to a garden, from a tree to a tree, from temptation of Adam to temptation of Jesus, from the first creation to a new creation, from heaven and earth to a new heaven and earth. So I was going to kind of bait folk to listen to us next week, mate. Do you want to comment on this now, or do you want to put it off?
Well, we can do both. We can comment now and put it off until later. Okay. Let me just say this. I really think it's healthy to do what you just said you can't do. For a moment, I think it's necessary at times for us to disband all of our preconceived notions and look at the possibilities. Because if we don't do that, okay, so such as, does this word contain the possibility of the connotation of anger? It does. Are these pictures possibly in there? Yes. Could it mean more than that? Yes. Could it mean much more than that? Yes. Could it have this meaning buried in it and not be actually about that? Yes. Why? Because the gospel and truth has a fractal nature to it. And you can see the seeds of everything, especially in this pictorial language of Hebrew. It really is quite amazing. However, the thing that we are, I think that we are subject to glean the truth that is in the statement, is to read it in context. Is there any hint of anger in this context? There just isn't any. Could though, behind the curtain, there be this understanding of something that was going to take place later? Yes, it is really possible. But as far as taking the Hebrew word and then reading this in context, I can't read anger into this because it's just not, it's not there in the context of these statements. Even though the word, of course, the word, if you will, pregnant with understanding of many things, not just this one thing, but the context is what guides our understanding of the individual word and its definition. Because as Barris has pointed out to us, especially about the Hebrew, these words have many, many profound understandings to them, and it really depends upon the context in which they are used. So, yes, please keep reading and getting the definition of these words, but then don't change the context to fit the word. Allow the context to help define the word. And in that light, we can continue to learn. And yes, still acknowledge, you know, this is really wild. This Hebrew word here has a connotation of anger. Do we find it anywhere else? And can we see that in this other case, that word, that the hints of anger actually are in the context? And in those situations, then it would fit. So this is the way I study. And I do abandon at times. Now, I do hang on to the rope. And I keep following that strand of truth. And I never let it go. But there are times where when you see something, it's quite all right to lay the rope down and just throw open the doors and say, wow, let's look at this for a little while. You know, sit down on your haunches and lay down the rope that you normally follow and say, let's look at the full possibilities here. Just in case, we don't want to miss something in this journey. So look at it. Look at it. Throw away all the filters. Throw away all of the possibilities. But don't ever walk away from the rope. You're going to go right back and follow that same rope. But after you have independently and allowed these verses and these definitions to stand for themselves and by themselves, and then bring them back into the context of the gospel itself.
I like that.
So we can pick this up again next week.
I like that, which we will.
Yeah.
So thanks for the question, because questions are
the lifeblood of the gospel revolution. And now you see why. Because, goodness gracious, we're free to think. That's why it's the lifeblood. We can think. We can challenge ourselves. So being challenged by others is a beautiful thing.
A beautiful thing.
Beautiful. It's more than beautiful. It's beautiful.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget, orthodoxy is oxymoronic. If orthodoxy was to be trusted in the least, then there would only be one version of it. What is more likely, do you think, that real orthodoxy might be found in one of the 40,000 versions of orthodoxy, or in your own heart and mind pre-planted there before you were born? Don't forget to visit www.onemikewilliams.com and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. In that, Mike lays out the gospel in simple, straightforward language and weaves it with stories from his own personal experiences, which led him to the place of ultimate peace where he now lives. Hardcover is $27, paperback is $15, and the Kindle edition a whopping $3.03. Come on, you've got to be able to afford one of those. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash and energy to research, produce and maintain this free product. This value for value model is the only way we feel we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you have received real value from this podcast, I'm asking you to seriously consider donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff Robertson about how you can participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. And remember, the cash is not the only way you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else, just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you'd like to invite Mike to your area. It is easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details, when, where, and why, and we will make that happen. So now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama, a town so pure, pristine, and primal that it had to be named after the mother of all humanity.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in Palm Beach Gardens, a place so natural it refers back to the Garden of Eden.
Alexa, what is the weather like in Palm Beach Gardens today?
Currently, in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, it's 83 degrees with mostly cloudy skies. Today, you can expect some sun and thunderstorms, with a high of 88 degrees and a low of 78 degrees.
Thank you, Alexa.
There you have it.
There you go. Well, we hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Better.
I might even tag this. I've got some free time in this. I might even tag this with some of that stuff we talked about earlier.
Sure. Have fun.
Thank you, friend. Enjoyed this. This was good.
Oh, it was fun. It's good to be back. I needed it.
There you go. Okay, buddy.
Love you.
Take care, friend.
You too, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, it's such a different mindset. I feel sorry for people that don't believe the gospel, Beres. Because if you don't believe the gospel, you have some form of terminal mentality about the planet. Whether it's Christianity or
global warming or just fear. I mean, you're going to have some form of terminal mentality. And it really prevents you from imagining. That's the thing that so robs. It robs the imagination, because if the world's going to end, why imagine anything? But I was turning onto my drive here, coming from my gym, the drive that goes past my house. And I just suddenly, I was like, I was in this world where that people from the 1700s were in my car with me, and they were just totally, I could see that they would think everything they were experiencing was a miracle. Everything.
Oh, witchcraft.
Yes. Yeah, depending on which one that they saw or were taught. And, you know, goodness gracious, just to ride in a car, not to mention how the transmission works, or that I could talk on a something they don't know about, a telephone, over my radio. And I remember when I used to have movies come out, that if you wanted to show that something was a ghostly or a witchcraft or something, somebody would talk to you through your radio.
Oh, yes.
Well, yeah, TV, remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and now that's how you talk to people, is through your radio. And they come right through the radio. It's just really crazy. But we were talking about the people in the 1700s. Could they imagine where we are? And, of course, they couldn't. You know, they just could not imagine where we are. But could we imagine where the world will be in 50 or 200 years? Mm. Well, we actually can. We would not. Now, if they would have seen a telephone, like you said, they'd have said witchcraft or, you know, something like that. But we can imagine people being, you know, the Star Trek thing of people's molecular structure being transported someplace else. We can, you know, we can imagine, you know, flying to or getting to Europe within, you know, an hour. We can, all of the things that possibly can happen in the future, we can imagine. We can imagine a world without disease. We can, you know, we can imagine that people don't age like they do now. Because we know those are all possibilities that are already in the making.
So in that respect, we are very different from people from the 1700s. See, the other the dynamic at play there is the rate of change.
Exactly.
The agrarian society of the 1700s had not changed for, except for the Industrial Revolution, had not changed for 2,000, 6,000 years pretty well. I mean,
yeah.
But in the last, in our lifetimes, the rate of change has changed. And we are now so used to people saying, God, when I was a kid, I mean, or things like, who'd have thought that this could be, or people who've lived from the buggy age to the nuclear age. We're now used to that, so we can actually imagine. That's fascinating.
It is. I didn't think about that, and Glenn challenged me on it. And he asked me, he says, do you think we can imagine what would be happening? Do you think we'd be shocked and totally unprepared for what we would see in the future? And I told him no, and he said, I think we would be ready for it. And I thought about it, and it's like, you know, I think you're right. You know, especially comparing people in the 1700s to now and from now forward. And the fact that we can imagine it causes it to happen that much faster even.
Wow. There's a thought.
Yeah.
Because, and there seems to be, and I don't want to get into quantum physics and all of that, simply because I don't have enough years left to understand it and probably pursue things that'll take me off my my chosen course now. But there absolutely seems to be something that all levels of science and pseudoscience, you know, such as quantum physics, quantum mechanics, agree that the universe is all just one big oneness, you know? The idea of the butterfly effect and that, which I used to poo-poo, I'm kind of coming around to understanding that a little bit better, and our connectedness with all things living, and probably all things dead as well, who knows? But I like some of the little videos I'm watching and some of the people I'm listening to. I like what I'm hearing because it just makes the gospel that much more real to me.
Yeah, exactly. It really is. You know, and I was saying it in Canada, and I, man, it's still awareness is still with me. We really are so privileged, Barris. I don't know of another word to use. I feel privileged to know the gospel. I just feel so privileged. And if the whole world knew it, I would still feel very privileged to know the gospel. You know, if I was the only one, I'd feel privileged to know the gospel. But we are, good God. It's such a privilege to know the gospel when you think of all of the things mentally and emotionally that the gospel adjusts for you. I mean, where could we have found something that would fix us without us knowing it?
If it's a chiropractor, you got to go to him.
Yes.
The gospel comes to you.
It comes to you, and it does its work. And will even very wonderfully, I tell you, I'm still observing myself and looking and saying, well, that's pretty, you know. Why do I do that? Why do I say that? What am I trying to accomplish when, you know, when I do this? Wow, that's pretty, that, I don't like that. And so then change of that, my ability, the way I negotiate with myself then changes. And then, of course, that whole thing changes. Goodness gracious. The gospel has the kindest way of helping you see even what you need. I didn't even know. I mean, we've had this conversation many times. But it's the things, I mean, I was filled with self-justification. What else do you do with yourself except you have no choice but to justify yourself? Because if you can't change yourself, what the hell else are you going to do?
Well, you can resign yourself. I've resigned myself in many areas that I say I'm 64. For example, ADHD. That has robbed me of certain things. I can choose to feel robbed, and I do choose to feel robbed. But because I seem to have the personality, or the characteristics of my personality seem to want to hark back, it's very difficult for me to let go of that stuff and dissociate myself from that stuff. So the best thing I can do is now throw myself into something like this project of this house. Yesterday I built me a new router table. Because I didn't want to spend the $150 on a router table and throw that money into the router instead. And if I keep myself busy enough, now I think that that is probably a sign of a lack of peace. But I choose, if I don't have peace in an area, I choose to find another way to deal with it. And it may not be the best way, and I may find a better way in the future. I hopefully will. But I am resigned to certain things.
Mm-hmm. But what gave you the ability to navigate just what you just said? To look at it objectively and not be forced, not be presented with, I've got to change, or this has to change, but to look at it objectively and come up with this is how I'm going to deal with this. How can you do that if you don't observe it?
Yes. Yeah. You've got to observe it first.
Yeah. And I, goodness, I was never willing to look at myself objectively. I just, I'm sure there were some things that I did, but that I looked at myself objectively, but most of it, I was just justifying myself.
That's the only, like you said, that's the only place I think we can go.
You know, what is it? Proverbs says, he that justifies himself condemns himself with his own mouth. Boy, there's more to that than you can possibly conceive of. You know, self-justification is paralyzation.
Well, you can't move forward.
No, you can't move at all. It's just, you're paralyzed.
And probably the more you get into that, the more you let that deceive you, say, as you get into that, now you're getting into things like, not getting into this, but things like bigotry. You become totally unable to change the more you get into it. Because you've got so much more you've got to say, I was wrong. Yeah.
Well, we've already done one show that didn't get recorded, so.
It actually did. 27 minutes and we've got it all on tape, mister.
Oh, we did.
Oh, by the way, I might have to have a pee break. I've been drinking liquids all morning. Welcome to the Gospel Bear. Welcome, 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 welcome. And you're still welcome at 6 inches away.